welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and thank you for joining me for part one of my talk with 94-year-old Frank Foxcroft. In today's program, Frank travels back to his very early years with recollections starting back to when he was three. Frank's father managed a number of grocery shops and indeed, Frank may have followed his father instead of becoming a teacher, if not for a family tragedy, which Frank explains along with stories about his school life, life as a boy playing in an ex-gold town, and how he became a school teacher, eventually being posted as a junior teacher in circumstances we would call primitive today. Now, let's listen to Frank. Frank, what I'd like to do is to ask you when you were born and where you were born.
I can remember back when I was 3 years old. That's my earliest memory.
Mm-hmm. Well, what year were you born in?
1912.
Melbourne boy?
No, Hamilton. Oh, Penzias, actually. But probably would have been born in the hospital. If I had to go to hospital, it would have been Hamilton. But I think my birth certificate always says Penzias. So
oh, okay.
Probably would have been born home, but my brother was, so that's...
Right.
I better stick to Penzias.
Well, you mentioned you can remember back to almost the age of three.
I can remember when my brother was born, 3 years younger than I am.
Goodness me, that's quite an amazing thing to be able to go back that far.
Well, it's rather funny. Of course, I didn't know anything about babies being born in those days, but I was apparently told to go and play with my next door neighbours, and we were outside their gate.
Right.
Making mud pies.
As boys do.
And then someone came along and said, "You've got a baby brother, just been born.
And what did that, can you remember what that meant to you?
Not much.
3 years of age, what do you remember of mum and dad in the early days? What were they like?
I found out many, many, many years later, after I'd retired, I was taking my father and mother up to meet the people who had outside whose place I'd been playing with the mud pies.
Oh, okay.
And on the way up, and Dad said, "Oh, that's where I used to camp." I said, "What do you mean used to camp?" He said, "When I was working at Bright, I used to have to take a wagon down to Melbourne and get supplies, and I used to camp there."
Right.
On the way down and on the way back. He said, "I had to have a revolver." Now, parents don't tell you so much, didn't tell you much in those days.
No. What did Dad do?
He was in a grocery shop, one of the workmen in the shop up at Bright.
So why did he carry a revolver?
Yes, he had a revolver for protection.
For protection?
Yes, that's back. See, well, that's... I didn't know anything about that until I had well and truly retired.
That was a secret he kept for a long time.
Oh, I don't know. Just as though they didn't...
Didn't think to talk about it.
They didn't talk much about it. Your parents were there. They were there. They put you to bed and they gave you clothes. And
did you have any other brothers and sisters?
I only had one brother. Mm-hmm. I had a baby sister who died when she was 4 days old.
Oh, that must have been sad for Mum.
It was sad. Made a big difference to my life, actually, because Dad at that time had decided he was going to buy a business and run it of his own down at Queenscliff. He'd been managing grocery shops, and he was an exceptionally good grocer anyway, put that way, and he decided he'd buy one. He's on his way down to clinch the deal. He was down there to clinch the deal. Baby only 4 days. Got the word, I came. Now, I used to love going and helping in the grocery shop at Christmas times and Easter time. And had he bought that, I wouldn't have been a school teacher. I'm quite sure I'd have been a grocer.
Yes. Yes, it's funny how these things trigger off the rest of your life, yes.
No, my mother, but yes, how my mother and father got on. But they were always there and did things. Well, they were kind to me. Except Mum gave me a big hiding one time. She caught me smoking. I'd be about 10, I suppose. Gave me the Harley, a long handled four-pronged wire toasting fork.
Oh, you've obviously never forgotten it.
And she belted me with that. And I said, that's nothing what you get if I catch you again. So I gave up.
Good on you, Mum.
But yeah, otherwise it's kinder than anything. It's really kind to other people too. Yeah. In those days, everybody helped everybody else.
It's a big difference between these days and those days, isn't it?
You knew your neighbours. Of course, there weren't so many people in the world then.
Mm.
You knew everybody, they knew you, and if you were in strife, they came and helped you, and if the other way around, they'd go and help.
Sure. School, Frank, what was school like for you as a young boy?
I started in a little place called Tarnagala. I found out just recently, I left when I was six. He asked what school was like. It was quite good. I can remember one, I was just laughing about this with somebody a couple of days ago. I got there one day and school was nice and quiet. And I'm the first to school. I was quite proud of myself. Don't forget, don't remember, I left when I was six. I must have been around four or five at the time. I got up to the school. School was in all right. I was late. And I remember when the armistice came, I had an 18. They rang and rang and rang and rang the school bell till the rope broke. That was it.
Had they spoken to you as kids at school what that meant, armistice? Did you understand?
I don't think so.
No.
Except that we used to, there were soldiers coming home from the war and they'd be met at the railway station and put on a lorry and driven through the town and a reception would be given. But I don't know, the school didn't mean much at all to me. It's just that everybody went to school and you went to school.
Right. Was it a big school?
I found out it had as a brick school, had two brick rooms, which is quite big for those days, being brick. But Tarnagala had been an old gold mining town. They had a battery there crushing the rock looking for gold, and right. The rock was turned into crushed up and turned into sand, and the sand was spread out over a huge area behind the main street, with the houses in the main street. And we had the time of our lives in that, digging holes and making caves and all the rest of it and playing there.
So it sounds like you had quite a few mates to play with.
I had the banker's son next, two sons next door. One got me into all sorts, got us into strife. The other one was about my own age. The other one must have been about 4 or 5 years old, I suppose. Yeah, he got us into a lot of strife.
Anything come to mind?
There was a little shop sold everything and the window got smashed. And the woman put another pane of glass loose in behind.
Mm-hmm.
And the cracker sees me looking at all these crackers. And this fellow, he managed to work the glass out over it and get his hand in and help himself to crackers and get it back. That's the banker's son.
That was the banker's son.
The banker's son.
Because in those days there were no restrictions on fireworks, were there?
No. I was only young.
Listen to older voices. Revisiting through recollections.
Had a lot of fun out there, an old gold mining place, and I said all this sand to play in. And kids could do what they liked, they would go yabby and parents weren't worrying about them and all that sort of thing. And nowadays, the parents would go stark staring mad if they knew where their kids were. That fellow next door, he built himself a eucalyptus distilling plant out of kerosene tins.
Gosh.
There was a eucalyptus distillery in the town.
Right.
It wasn't a very big town. The whole town was going backwards and backwards and backwards.
Yeah.
Used to be about three very big shops. And when we were there, it was down to just the one. We used to be able, in one of the shops you're allowed to play in, so we used to play shop and have all the fun about the place in it. But it's funny how, I've forgotten all about this. Dad had a sense of humour which I didn't realise at the time. There were a lot of sparrows around the place and they were getting into our grapes. And I was trying to chase them away, and Dad said, "Oh, they're easy to catch. Just put a bit of salt on their tail."
You tried.
we were living behind one of the empty shops at the time. We moved over across next to the bank later on, and there was a big bag of salt, lumps of salt, and I was throwing lumps of salt at these
burrows. So, a few years go on, Frank. You must have obviously gone from primary school to secondary school.
Oh yes, after a few years. For a while, Dad and Mum, for some unknown reason, separated. I've never asked. I didn't want to bring it up at all. But I lived with my aunt for about 18 months, and then I don't know what caused the trouble, but anyway, we went to Hamilton and started life of the family up there.
With Mum or with Dad?
Both.
With both?
They came back. I don't know, as I said, I've never asked them.
Oh, they separated and came back together?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what it was about.
No.
I never asked.
No.
I didn't want to bring up the subject, and of course,
kids don't like doing that.
But even when I got older, anybody asks.
Right.
I still don't know why, what happened anyway, but that's what happened. And then we finished up in Hamilton. Dad was managing a big grocery store in Hamilton, Bay Miller and Co. there, and that's where I spent all my rest of my life until I got married and left the town.
Well, before we jump that far ahead, because that's a lot of things happening there in a few seconds, when did you get the desire to become a school teacher? When did that sort of happen? Were you a youngish man, or did that come later in life?
Well, my aunt had been a school teacher, and my mother had lived with her in a little, in a two-roomed house attached to the school. My mum went with her for company and that sort of thing, and she's always talking about school, my aunt, and my mother was very particular in the way she spoke, and no going and coming and
yes,
things like that, and made sure you use the correct English. And anyway, at the high school at that time, it seemed that everybody who went to the leaving certificate, they were urging people to become junior teachers, teachers, and I suppose in my form, when I passed the leaving, everyone either became a teacher or went in for governess on a big property.
Goodness.
It's really being teacher. That's what they were sort of, at that particular time, that's what they were.
That was what people did?
Yes.
Right.
When I got my leaving, I decided I wanted a job, so I put in for a bank job, an accountant's job, and a school teacher's job. I didn't get any of them, so I was back to school. And after I'd been back at school about a month, probably a bit less, yes, less than a month, I was told that if my eyes were good enough, I could get the accountant's job. So I got drops put in my eyes. In those days, when you put drops in, they took a while to work off. They're not like it now. You get the drops in and you can more or less get around very quickly after. And when I went home for dinner, there was a letter from the education department, so I'd been appointed as a junior teacher at Dunkeld. That's about 20 miles from Hamilton, so why I got out to Dunkeld. Straight into the classroom and watch how we go about this. So there were three classrooms there, and I was in the infant room, just wandering around and hardly see what I'm doing.
Got the drops still.
Oh, I had a lovely time the first day. And in that classroom, there were two boys. One was a big 16-year-old, strong as a lion, but very, very mentally. And every now and then he'd make a grunt or a noise. But they used to put him from grade to grade around to spread
the work
among the other teachers. And another little fellow, absolutely little runt. And he was, in the same grade as my first day there.
Right.
Anyway, that didn't matter. But tell you what happened. I was lucky. I was boarding with my aunt across the road, and this woman in the infant room, she also boarded there, so she's a bit of a help. But she said, tomorrow I'll get you to take a pastel drawing of capeweed. I'd never had used a pastel in my life. I'd done pencil drawing but and all that type of thing. No, so anyway, I got some pastels from the school and took them home, and a special paper you use when you're drawing with pastels. Had my tea and went out there to pick some capeweed. The whole paddock was covered with capeweed, but everyone was closed up.
Oh. That was hard to be successful then.
I learned that's my first nature study lesson. Anyway, in those days, only infant room anyway. Nowadays, they get a bit of paper and they go for their life and they turn out all sorts of funny looking stuff and they say, oh, that's lovely, isn't it, and all the rest of it. Yeah, but I was in there for a few days and I was moved into the headmaster's room. He had the grade 5, 6, 7, 8, I think. No, he had 6, 7 and 8. Doesn't matter. There were three different teachers taking different sections, and I was in his room there, and I had more or less charge of a certain section of it, but he'd keep an eye on it, see if I was in a bit of strife, he'd just leave what he was doing and come over and get me on the right track and all the rest of it. At the beginning, it was pretty easy. Mostly observing, and then the lessons after school, and each month you had to give a special lesson in front of one of the teachers and they'd sit back and criticise it.
Yes.
And you'd have to go and listen to them give a lesson, a demonstration, you call that one.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then you discuss it after what you thought was wrong, and so that's how it went on anyway. At the end of the year you had to go for an examination. And then next year go for another examination. So then after about 2 years, if you'd passed the examination, you're entitled to go to the teacher's college. But at that time, I'd only done Kiel for about a year, and then I moved to Hamilton. And the same thing was going on, they carried on. There are more teachers there to give you help too.
Yes, would be.
And after 2 years, I'd be entitled to go to a teacher's college. And for some unknown reason, I decided to make it next year. When the next year came, they were closing down schools, colleges. So I think it was about 3 years before I could get into college.
Listen to older voices. Living History on Ageless Radio.
But anyway, they opened up the college later on and we had 300 students all down.
Wow.
So they had to divide them up into six different groups.
And that was still a large group, 50.
Yeah, that's teacher's college. And then you were sent out to different... You're given lectures and all the rest of it. I think I knew more about teaching by then than some of the lecturers we had. That sounds a bit like an exaggeration, but it's...
But you'd been in schools for some 3 or 4 years, but...
I had my own grade for 12 months.
Oh, there you go.
I grade 4 for 12 months. I was teaching the inspector's just son and the headmaster's son. And I'd also, the year before, I'd been teaching the headmaster's daughter.
Right.
And they had to write a report on us, the
yes.
junior teachers.
And, yes. Did you ever feel nervous about having to teach children of people who are so senior in the teaching profession? Did that ever worry you?
No, it didn't worry me at all, actually. I was a nice kid and I got on well. I don't know why, but anyway. So I got to teachers' college, and then as a matter of while I was down there near the end of the year, I had a list of schools that were available for all our mob down there, and I had looked through it, and I thought, well, I came from Hamilton. My girlfriend Sheila, my later wife, she lived in Hamilton still, so I'm looking for all the schools close to Hamilton. and just working out from there. We got some little school called Yulong, and I didn't know where it was.
No, I've never heard of Yulong.
I got the notice and I just wanted to wear Yulong. So I went to ring the tourist bureau. No, they didn't know it. Rang the railways. No, they didn't know it. They knew one called Y-U-U-L-O-N-G, and mine was Y-U-L-O-N-G. Anyhow, to make a long story short, I managed to get hold of the Gazette that had all the there, and I found it was 30 miles from Hamilton. So that was,
did you have a driving license at that stage?
I had a motorbike license.
Oh, okay.
I had a motorbike, but I didn't have enough money to run it down the city. I used to ride everywhere on a push bike when I went down to the teacher's college. So the
motorbike got you to Yulong?
Yes, and back from Yulong. I used to ride up on Monday morning and come back on Friday night, Friday after school. It's rather interesting because the motorbike I had in those days, so I'm going back and I'm talking, it's a 1930 motorbike. Mightn't be quite 30. But they had acetylene light. Did you know anything about acetylene lights?
Not for motorbikes, no.
Well, they had that on there, and it'd be all right going around the town, just down the street and back and that sort of thing, but taken for a 30-mile trip through there.
So were these like the headlights, was
yes.
it?
Yes.
Oh, right, so it's a gas-driven headlight.
Yeah, gas. Well, anyway, my idea was, of course, I'd leave in the daylight, and I'd wait till dawn, till the sun came up, or near enough to come up, then away I'd go up to the school on the Monday morning, and then had to get down to Hamilton before dark.
You didn't want to be kept behind at school.
Eventually I got rid of that and I got a generator off a push bike, you know,
right.
off the tyre.
Yes.
I never used it, but I had it there in case if I had to use it, I could just ride slowly along, and I got the tail light and the headlight.
But yes.
Then later on I got a motorbike and a sidecar, a big beautiful ex-police matchless, huge thing. And then I got a car and that was it.
You mentioned Sheila was your girlfriend before you married her.
Yeah.
Can you recall how you met her?
I was very young. I went to our Sunday school and they were praying for Sheila Thurgood. She was having an operation, a big operation on her jaw. I didn't know who she was, but that's the first time. Anyway, that doesn't matter. That she used to be in our church, and as we grew up, she was a good tennis player, and we played tennis together, and we had a tennis court down at the church. We had a girls' club and a boys' club, and we used to amalgamate, and we had what we call a guild for everybody. Old people, young people, a whole lot, and she was in that, and I was in that, and that's how we met.
So your friendship developed from there?
Yeah, she was one of the most popular girls down there, and I was the lucky one.
You obviously were the lucky one. What did you do together for recreation, other than play tennis? I mean, what did young couples do?
Young couples. Well, I didn't do what a lot of them did. A lot of them went to the pictures. I never went to the pictures. I was saving up money to go to the teacher's college.
Of course.
And we used to go for long walks together, and I'd go to her place and park in the lounge room. It must have been her father got the idea of taking out one of the lounge chairs into the room next door. We parked on that.
Good for him. Obviously her father liked you.
Oh, God, mate. He's one of the nicest chaps I ever knew.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long were you going out together before you got married?
Well, I got married in 1937. And I went to teacher's college in 1934. We were well and truly in love. We weren't engaged. But so much in love that she was prepared twice while I was down there to travel down on one of those big transports at 30 miles per hour to come and stay down.
Gosh, that is dedication.
Yeah, and people with drivers she didn't even know.
That would have been pretty unusual in those days, wouldn't it?
It was very unusual.
Yes. And it all worked out.
Unusual for women.
Well, that's what it meant, yes. Yes, definitely. And she remained safe?
She wasn't so worried about them because, in a way, they came carted goods up to my father, where my father was. And so I suppose you could recommend someone like that, but it really was something. 30 miles an hour. And leaving at about 6 o'clock.
Gosh.
Travelling
all that way.
Anyway, I suppose I was chasing after her from about the time of about 18, I suppose. Just after I left school, anyway. When I moved back into Hamilton in 1930. Anyhow, that was that.
So when you got married, did you move to the place where you were teaching, or when you got married, did you look for a different school depending upon where you wanted to live?
Well, that's the story, but whether different people want to hear it, I don't know.
Next week, Frank continues the story of life as a school teacher. A school teacher with a new wife in a single room. And he tells how life developed and advanced from there, and how his wife, Sheila, played such an important part in his life. Next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.